You're listening to Christina's Room podcast, a place where startup founders, entrepreneurs, and executives can find inspiration from me and other founders to grow awesome businesses and fulfill their dreams. My name's Christina Imre, and I coach VC-backed startup founders and mission-oriented leaders thrive in business and life. Hello, everyone. Let me introduce you to today's guest, Preston Keating, who is the co-founder of Packform, a one-stop shop marketplace in packaging. But for sure, they just don't want to stop here. So I'm very pleased to have you today, Preston. Welcome to my show.
Thank you, Christina. Glad to be here. Thanks.
I want to tell you, Preston, that your story to me is also intriguing and interesting, because what you achieved during the last 3 years is something that you could just write in a book. I mean, you do have so many gems to share with us today, and I'm very interested and curious to unfold those for other founders as well. And just to name a few, for example, you founded the company officially in the late 19s. So you don't have a fixed 3 years yet. And then you were cash flow positive from the beginning. You had such a growth. And then you also took the Stevie Awards, the Global Stevie Awards for innovative startup and also the technology startup for 2020. And then you just never stopped. And even more interesting is that you raised last year, the end in November, 25 million, but not because you needed to, but because you're seeking IPO this year. I mean, wow, your story is absolutely amazing. And my first question to you before I frame the story from where I want to start is, if you consider now the 3 years you went through, did you have any idea that you will reach such a huge stage in 3 years? How do you feel today if you revise these 3 years?
Yeah, I mean, it's been an incredible journey. We actually started the business in late 2018, but we were building technology, developing the system, really flushing out the bugs in the system. And it's 2019 when we really hit the gas and just, you know, all hands on deck, focused to scale the business. So, you know, for me personally, I come from the corporate side. I was 20 years with a public company, worked my way to the top of that. My business partner, Phil Weinman, is a serial entrepreneur. So I think in my world, this is an incredible ride and I'm just enjoying it as it gets bigger and scales every minute. And in Phil's world, this is what he does for a living. So he looks 5 miles down the road and he knows, you know, what the end game is going to be. And then his goal is to get it there as quick as possible. So for me, this is journey number one of many, and it's been an incredible one. For Phil, I think this is his 18th journey on building businesses, private sale, or going public. So it's been an incredible ride.
Even if you started in 18 or before, it's still a great, great story. And I think that many of those success ingredients, like just laying up together in your case. And I think even Philip was amazed about how soon everything just laid out and your success became so quickly apparent. And this is how I would love to start our story, because of course, I know your background and it's interesting. So you are a very stable executive in another packaging, publicly traded packaging company. So You are not the type of person who just jumps here and there. And you learn a lot about the industry and you were almost for 2 decades there. And then one day you go to Australia to a conference where you see Philip Weinman on stage and you are just absolutely inspired by him and you decide then that you want him as a mentor. And so after the conference, you are speaking with him and you have a great discussion, but he will tell you that he won't mentor you because in his mind at that point, he retired after 16 startups, right? And also his wife agreed about this, that it's time to just stay there. But you didn't stop. You pursued this vision or motivation of yours that he should be your mentor. So you sent him wine at his hotel. You did the same with his wife. So you did pursue this vision of yours. And at the end, his wife became your, let's say,
my advocate.
Your advocate in front of him. So At the end, he said yes to you. And this is the moment where I want to start. So yes, you come from corporate. You are not an entrepreneur. He's a serial entrepreneur, retired. He built up a lot of successful companies. And you two come together. So in that moment, when you wanted him to mentor you, you were thinking about becoming a founder, or it was just like you want to learn from him?
No. I was looking for an exit for many, many years. I knew the corporate world and this kind of the monotony was a bit boring for me. It provided for a nice lifestyle, and I'm pretty thankful for that. But I knew there had to be more out there than just working my way up the corporate ladder and then retiring. It's just not something I was built to do. So when Phil shared his story at that conference in Australia, for me, that was the light bulb moment when I thought, okay, this is the exit. Hopefully this is the right partner. I'll find out, but this is the right way to exit, is to leap from corporate, very sales driven, to entrepreneur. Seems like a natural progression. And how can I make this happen? And then obviously pursued Phil, and the rest is history.
How long it took until the idea of this company took form between the two of you?
Almost immediately. So after the conference, part of it was really looking at how can we disrupt the industry that I'm in, packaging. And that's when the ideas just started flowing. So from there, Phil takes an idea and just starts to run with it immediately. He's very impatient. And he already had the end game figured out, in my opinion, probably in 1 minute. But then it's just setting the groundwork and putting the processes in place to really execute it. So fast forward a bit, once the business starts to take legs, essentially Phil gets the band back together, right? He calls the developers he had contacts with. He gets the marketing, the admin, and brings all the pieces back together with a new industry expert, right? Because each of his businesses are in different industries. The previous one, travel, this one now packaging. So he brings in a partner that's the expert in the industry, gets his team assembled that have done this, many times before. And then from there, it's a fantastic journey.
You mean Peter Williams, the third co-founder?
Yeah. So Peter's a big part of that as well. So he's well known for building Deloitte Digital, which is, a giant digital agency. So getting him in the mix on how we're going to disrupt digitally an industry, Phil's entrepreneurial strengths and my knowledge in the industry was a pretty nice combination.
It's really cool because you have many ingredients that sound a little bit difficult at the beginning, but also you have your trump card. So you live in different locations. You started like a remote company, right? How did you manage your meetings at the beginning until you truly formed the company and you put the base of it?
Yeah, no, we were doing the remote working before it was popular, right? Once COVID hit, everybody was kind of forced to do it. But as a business with a chunk of it in Australia, the balance of it in the US, transacting almost predominantly in the US, we were establishing a business that was truly global from day one. So, we were quick to pop on Zooms and all that sort of stuff before it was very commonplace. And we rarely use email, it's too slow. So we have our system set up where it's just very quick messaging and movement. So we just keep up as a business and operate essentially around the clock. And then from there, we just started establishing back office and business units and development, all different pieces of the business all over the world. And now currently we operate out of 9 countries, and our business just runs around the clock in different parts of it, different aspects.
What do you think it was the first breaking point moment when you have an idea, let's do this, we do have the expertise, we also have capital, we don't need extra capital because there is Philip. So these are the good parts, but that doesn't guarantee success. And let's just put them together and now launch in the market. What happened? What happened that just showed you that, wow, this can be big and this can be quickly?
Easy. When I was sued, that told us by my ex employer, that told us that we were onto something really good. And then we all knew this is good. They're trying to stop us at any cost. Let's go all in and make this happen. And we did exactly that.
When did they sue you? Just at the beginning when you left the company?
Yep. Almost immediately. And it was, in my opinion, a tactic to slow us up and try to bury us, not realizing that, I partnered up with the powerhouse and we could certainly take on the 800-pound gorilla. and have a lot of fun doing it.
And that lawsuit is over. I believe it's done.
Dismissed. Yeah, dismissed. It was a stall tactic.
So for you, it was an extra motivator that you are on the right path and that you should go further. How did you accelerate the business so fast?
Gosh, we built out great technology that could scale really, really quickly. So we're not bound by assets and buildings and just slow growth in that sense. It's a digital business. So we built beautiful technology that could handle as much in sales as we could put into it. Myself, I'm very sales-based. So my job was to bring in as many sales dollars coming through the channel as possible. And Phil, being the entrepreneurial base, built technology that could handle as much as we could shove through it. So it's been a great thing. The technology still has yet to break, yet to fall down. And this is starting from absolutely nothing, transacting dollar one. And now where we're at, where we're putting through just millions and millions and millions of dollars, it still is just seamless technology.
So you think this was the most important thing? Because I see all of these ingredients, like your expertise put together, that it's also from the industry, someone who knows everything about entrepreneurship and founding companies and brings success, then also having the capital and also COVID hit. So everything just shifted. And for you, this was the perfect moment. Do you think it's related that you just grow so fast because COVID hit during that period? So timing could be one of your biggest, luck charms.
Yeah. I mean, timing definitely played in our favor. When COVID hit and the world was forced to work remotely and do all that, we were already set up to do that. And it just increased the speed at which we could operate. We watched the traditional companies that are just asset leveraged really struggle to figure out how to work. Empty buildings and teams that were used to logging into ERP systems and a corporate address. And it's just a really tough environment. And we just zoomed right by them because we were already set up to do it. So that the COVID whole thing was just the greatest thing that could have happened. It just sped up the progress of digital businesses.
As far as I see, you are very cooperative with each other. Who plays the CEO role? Because you don't have that like listed. It's something I would say it's you, but you don't promote yourself as the CEO.
Yeah, well, we don't have titles. It's not necessary. We each have our responsibilities and what we cover and make sure our work is done. But to flag people with titles and have hierarchy and all that, it's just not how we operate. So we're a very flat business. Anybody can call anybody. Any member of the team can call me or Phil or Peter. It doesn't make any difference. And likewise, and we're all accountable to each other. So we choose not to operate with CEO titles.
So this is one of the things I want to approach because, okay, you are a flat business. Everyone is seen as a family. You have this kind of family unit where trust is crucial. And also you give autonomy to your people, as far as I know. So they can take quick action compared to a big corporation where everything is just so slow that you can go asleep. And do you think that this plays a role for a fast-growing company? To just give this autonomy and don't put so much emphasis on titles?
Yeah, I think you have to. If you mimic what the big, slow corporate competitors are doing, it's a really long, slow road to get to the top. So I just always like to do the opposite of what others are doing if I believe in it. And in this case, certainly it played out well for us. So it works well, right? So you trust your people, you give them a lot of responsibility, a lot of freedom, and you choose the right team and things just tend to happen.
Okay. Now I would love to touch a little bit something that you could share with other founders, because today many people want to found a company and many people come from a corporate world. And so they don't have this entrepreneurial background. And you are one of them. So now you do have this experience where you entered, you saw what happened, you went through your own struggles to learn quickly how to run a business, not just be part of a big organization. So could you lead us a little bit through your journey from where you began, what was tough for you, what you learned, what could you suggest to others who come from the corporate world and want to fund a company?
Yeah. I mean, a few things that I picked up along the way, just the need for unbelievable financial diligence in the beginning. As you said early, you know, when we started the interview, it was, you know, we were profitable day one, which is 100% true, but we were also very conscious of the money we were spending and running a profitable business and, you know, limiting expense when possible and just really being true to that. So we didn't have to raise money or go out for outside capital. We, you know, we're completely self-funded and we're in, even still today, as we, you know, have a little room to relax if we wanted to, we still operate with the same financial diligence just to make sure we're a healthy, profitable business. The second thing that I've learned is just the power of asking for advice. When you're formulating a business model and a plan and seeing where you want to be, everybody loves to give advice and it's free. So we sought out really smart industry experts in technology and in business and just got their opinion on a model and what do they think and where's the industry growing and what would they recommend. And it's amazing the guidance you can get to really, you know, sharpen your business model. So when you're ready to fully deploy it, you hit the ground running really, really fast. And I think those two things have served us really well.
And I also know that you have an internal mentoring kind of process. So people are mentoring other five under them and then other five and other five. And so you've created a tree in a sense that everyone knows deeply how this business operates. So I believe this is the way you also transmit culture in a very natural way. So
yeah.
Is it safe to say that your company is full of mentors?
100%. Yeah, especially at the growth we have where we're adding, you know, many, many people each month. You don't want to add and grow and lose what made you great, right? So that mentoring program where the PacFormers that come on board really understand the culture from the folks that mentor them. And then they're entrusted to relay that culture to the next team that comes on board probably the next month. And it just really keeps at the core of what makes us PacForm, which is our culture, keeps it intact. And that's the fear with this rapid growth is you lose it. And once you lose it, it's gone. So it's been a big part of our growth.
What was the most difficult thing for you to adjust once you started your own company, basically? And it was completely different from your corporate world.
For me, you know, I'm used to a corporate environment where there's rules and things you can do and things you can't do. And it's very organized and precise and predictable. And then in the entrepreneurial world, it's a 100% blank page. Now, in my past life in the corporate world, the rules and restrictions, they drove me crazy, which is why I wanted to find an exit. But then when you go into the entrepreneurial life and it's a blank page, you're naked, right? So you're just left to figure it out. Now, having gone through it and kind of the thrill of it, I love it and I wouldn't have it any other way. But that's a big, big change, just to be completely out in the open and just trying to figure out the best way to build what you believe in.
I also perceive you as a long-term strategist, let's say, or someone who has a long-term vision and also maybe a legacy builder based on your background. So how do you see getting an IPO so quickly? What's next? Because I don't think you just want to stop here. You do have a bigger vision for yourself and what you want to build.
Yeah, no, your assumption is spot on. So I'm much more long-term process-driven and Phil's much more of a shotgun approach, right? So you look at that and they kind of balance each other out. And Peter is a great part of the team as well because he's very much in the balance and mentoring and all that sort of stuff. So it all works out really well. The IPO is extremely exciting for all of us and just getting to there and then the kind of the next path ahead. But it's, you know, it's still a journey beyond that. So for me, it's just understanding the next part of the journey. And what can we do to build a legacy after that and just enjoying the moment.
Now, when it comes to value, what do you think is the most valuable thing that you brought into the marketplace in packaging, especially because now you want to enter different markets, like basically to sell anything on your platform, because once you figured out packaging, which is pretty hard to figure out because it has so many different moving parts. So you started with the hard stuff. And now you want to become like an Amazon or Alibaba, right? So you have big competitors, but also your success proves that you can do it. You can do anything you want.
Yeah.
So I'm curious about the value you brought to the market. What do you think? Where did you have the most, or a platform had the most, the market?
Yeah, I think our biggest value is just transparency, creating transparency in a really complex process being packaging. You know, back to my past life, it was overbuilt to be complicated and confusing, and then that was led to believe that it created value. And in pack form, we just simplified the process, made it transparent, which just increased the speed, helped lower the cost, made for a more pleasant experience for everyone. And that's been our biggest value. So the customers that are on board love it, because they can understand and see exactly what's going on and not have to wait for answers and move at the speed of their business. The suppliers that are on board love it, because they have transparency on if they win projects, if they don't. They can form good relationships with the dealers, who are our salespeople that are part of the system, just a more transparent process. And then the dealers, who are our sales team, love it, because they get full transparent view of the entire process. So unlike a corporate environment where there's hidden costs and rebates and bonuses and all these things you don't see, in Packform, it's just a very simple, clean, transparent process that everyone can benefit from.
What was the biggest challenge during COVID, because everything just skyrocketed in your case, and many suppliers came to you to, or even distributors to just take their stock, right? So I believe maybe you were not so prepared for such a huge volume at the beginning. How did you solve that? What were your struggles at that time?
Yeah, I mean, during COVID, supply chain was challenging. Just like companies in the packaging industry, suppliers, manufacturers, distributors had to figure out how to operate their business, making products without having employees to the full, you know, the full scale of what they wanted to make those things. So it was a retrain for the supply chain to help them understand the value of our technology, how it could allow them to still sell products and operate a business and continue to survive, but you doing it a little differently, right? So they may not have in-person visits, but now it's via our technology and connect to projects that are available, and just kind of retraining the supply chain. And it was a hard process, and we have a great team on board on the supply chain side that really worked with suppliers to explain the value of it. And then once it started to turn, it just really ramped up our scale.
So you also provided education for suppliers, because they needed to change their ways to this new technology way, basically, right? Where you take over the middleman and just provide for them, right, what they need.
Yep, absolutely. So we have a great team that's part of training supply chain and showing them the what we built and how it can make it easier and grow their business with more sales without adding resources and all the things that maybe a traditional company wouldn't assist with, right? They want to have more service and have the suppliers add more resources and get more rebates. We're doing the exact opposite.
Do you believe you saved suppliers during and since COVID?
Maybe some. Yeah, maybe there were some that were able to keep their doors open. We were funneling in sales. Yeah, I'd like to believe that.
And how far you are now in your journey to IPO? Because it's planned for this year. So I believe there are so many things to take care of for this process. And it could be stressful. Where are you?
We're right on track. So everybody's working really hard from each aspect of the business to prepare financially and get the right scale in the business and everything we need to do. We've got a great team. Everybody is very much into their lanes in the business for whatever that would be. And as long as everybody understands kind of what they're doing to be beneficial to the greater Packform, then we'll achieve exactly what we want. And everything's going perfectly.
And what's next after the IPO?
It's a big market. You know, packaging is one drop in it, and we're one speck in that drop. So there's tons to accomplish in packaging for sure. But as you said, it's you know, essentially we're a buy and sell marketplace. So we're not limited to any product or anything like that. So we just continue to perfect the process, figure out how to get faster and faster scale, and grow, you know, the vision that we have.
What's your biggest advantage compared to all of those who saw maybe your story and they want to do the same and copy your success?
I mean, obviously the people are what make the company, but it's harder than you think to duplicate our model. It's, you know, it doesn't happen by snapping your fingers and putting up a website. There's so much involved. So I feel like we have a really good head start, and we have a pretty good pulse on, you know, others that are looking at the model and trying to duplicate it. And I still think we're so far ahead of everybody else. So it serves us pretty well.
And also for the big players, I would imagine that changing business model, it's also not so easy like many people would might think, because changing a business model is almost like changing the company structure from the base. And yeah, that's also an advantage for you, because you're the first ones who are playing here. By the way, I also love your website. I mean, it's so sleek. It's nicely designed, and it's maybe interesting for a packaging company or marketplace. So who has this kind of design concept? Who is the creative in your team?
Yeah, I mean, Phil's a creative, right? This is his forte. Oh, yeah, definitely. Very hands-on. Along with Peter Williams, you know, from his Deloitte Digital experiences. So they know how to build really clean technology. And I remember along the way, if it was an analyst or somebody, as soon as they jumped into our website and started to hear our story, they picked up in 10 seconds, oh, this is a Phil Wineman project. It's his tech. They see it, they recognize it, because it's built to be very clean, very easy, very user-friendly, and extremely workable, right? So it doesn't break down.
Yeah, this was my impression also, because it's so user-friendly and it's simple, but well-organized, the colors, everything. I said, wow, this is one of the best designs, especially for such a complex platform that includes sales and everything, you know? So congrats for that too.
Thank you.
Do you think that everything just aligned in case of your company? It's very hard to imagine that something could went even better, but I want to ask, do you think that you could do something to be even better, to be in a better state than you are today?
Sure. Yeah, like I said, the system has never broken, never fallen down. So I believe wholeheartedly that we could have 100 times the sales, 1,000 times the sales, and we would continue to operate because the lanes are established, the system works, everything is just running fluidly. So yeah, I mean, for me, if I would just snap my fingers, I would want it to be 1,000 times the size we are today, and just continue to watch it grow.
You are still not such a big team, and you have a revenue around $500 million, somewhere close to that. And that's, to me, I mean, for many standards, it's something to just be proud of. And you are so down to earth. And this is also interesting from my perspective, because I would love to touch a little bit the personality behind the successful founder, you know, and I see many traits in you. One, it was persistence. You knew that you want something. You knew that you want Philip as mentor, and you were not just so easy to give up on this. Then you are also very serious when you approach business. You don't just drink Kool-Aid, even if you like wine, and you produce wine with your wife. So you do have your passions. Congrats for that. In California, I believe that's a perfect spot to be. And you have time for your children. So you are a balanced person. Don't take just business as the only goal in life, but still you are so successful in it. You build the right team around you. What do you think makes a successful founder as yourself from all of these ingredients I mentioned?
I guess for me personally, it would just be staying true to your roots and grounded, right? I got really good advice early on when I was a new business person, just to never forget where you came from. And you know, all the success will follow, and that's all great. But just remember who you are. And it stuck with me. It was good advice from an early days mentor of mine. And I always try to really keep that balance so I don't lose sight of, you know, where I started from, which was nothing. I'm the son of two music teachers. And, you know, just entered out and tried to figure it out in the world. And that's important, right? Too many people get caught up in all the success and the hype and all that sort of stuff. But it's, you know, it's transient. It comes and goes, and that's fine. So you just need to remember where you came from.
That was also one of the reasons I wanted to interview you, because I think you're such a great role model for the young generation and other potential founders, because especially someone who just had success with its first company, you know, it could be something that the balance is his brain and mental status and becomes so much too full with himself or herself, you know. And I believe that it's also your education, you seeking mentorship constantly, keeping in mind that others can know things better than you, also being very close to other people. I believe that you're a good communicator and a friend even. And once you get what you work for, you also see that it's part of the process, but anything can happen tomorrow. And so it's just good to keep it as planned and move forward without just thinking that, oh, I'm the best already and I know everything, right?
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, if you hit each day with the plan, then no matter what happens, you can alter your plan, change it, but at least you know kind of what you want to start with and where you want to go. And then that's fine, change it 1,000 times. But as you start each day, just set a plan and figure out what you want to accomplish that day. And just in these little bite-sized goals as you go, and then the goals become bigger and more exciting and whatever they are, but you just stick to the goals.
If we should wrap up today's conversation, what is your secret recipe of success? Let's work with me here. So we had that first is a great team, right? With different expertise. You do have enough money to just start what you want to do, to be open to listen to experts and what they say from the market, to have industry expertise, right? And use the power of technology, communication, and also create a family kind of environment also for your clients to feel very comfortable to join a new system, which was very, very new for them from faxes and this kind of old ways. Is there something I missed and you would complete in my formula?
Yeah, I think, and this ties into the early days and kind of throughout my career, is just that persistence, right? So hearing no 1,000 times and believing in what you're doing and just continuing to push forward because you know it's right, or to be successful or whatever that is. So I, you know, being sales based, I'm really used to hearing no, and it's no different in entrepreneurship, where everyone in the beginning will tell you that it won't work, it can't work, it's, you know, a terrible idea. It's okay to change and adjust a little bit, but just being willing to take advice and keep moving forward.
By the way, that you mentioned sales, you know, I always said also in my previous work and in coaching or mentoring that this is one of those skills that will help you whatever you do, just to not die hungry. And I believe, and I saw this in success stories of many entrepreneurs, that they have a sales background, or even if they were not in sales team, but they did sell, you know, in one way or another, they were not afraid of selling, you know, talking with others. How important would you say that your sales experience was for the moment you are now with Backform?
That's where, for me, that's where it all starts from. So there's the old adage that nothing happens until somebody sells something. And I think that's completely true, right? You could have the greatest idea or the most amazing widget or the most beautiful technology, and if you can't communicate that and show someone else the value of what you've created, it'll stay just that, just a secret. So I think that sales is kind of the catalyst for everything. And I'm really glad that I, you know, for me out of college, it was my first and only option was a sales career. So I jumped into it head first and thought I'll figure it out. And that was a lucky decision. And it just served me well for the rest of my career.
Yeah, and look, it also forms that kind of modesty you have, because in this profession, you receive all those rejections that at the beginning are so heartbroken for most, and they just give up many at the beginning of their career in sales. But those who perceive, they get to this moment where they have that wisdom, you know, that, okay, I can be wrong. A no, it's just a no. It's not because I am bad or I'm wrong or I'm not worthy. It's just not my product or my service is not needed by the other side. And when you start to internalize, because that's the most important thing, when you internalize something, knowing we can know everything today, but if we don't internalize it, it's just like an information, that's it, it's not knowledge. And you did have that, and so I congratulate you and your team. I believe that your story is an inspiration. You should write a book. how to get to IPO in 3 years, even if you had that kind of initial training period. Like most of the startups, until they launch, they have a period of test research, thinking about their product. So that's typical. Even so, it is a very short period of time in which you obtain this kind of status today. So I congratulate you, and I'm looking forward to see what happens with PacForm and to see your IPO this year. By the way, did you decide if this will happen in Australia or in the US?
Yeah, I mean, Australia most likely, right? So Phil is so well connected there with the investment community and with his businesses. So that's a logical choice.
This was a pleasure, Preston. Thank you for accepting my invitation. And I hope that our audience learned a lot from your experience and story.
Yeah, my pleasure, Christina. Thank you.
Subscribe to Christina's podcast and stay connected through her social media channels too.